Hello again. So today we have Jim Stevenson with us, a friend of mine, an incredible man, ex-professional football player, now running his own fitness brand, which has got a multitude of franchises and is doing really, really well, but also has a really keen interest in men's mental health and what we're doing. And interestingly, Jim and I were training together a few weeks ago, and we kind of scheduled in like a bit of a session for an hour, and kind of 2.5 hours later, we were still talking, having hardly done any reps, and just went home from that conversation and just said, there's something that needs to happen about this. I felt so empowered by your company. I felt so inspired by your company, and I found my own flow being around you. So kind of this is the start of something. And and interestingly, actually, we've just found out off air that you guys may have played together in the past as well.
Yeah, apparently.
We were trying to work it out. We might have been in the same dressing room, but can't actually remember.
No, I think it sums up probably how numb I was at that point in my life playing football. Yeah. The fact that I can't actually remember.
Yeah.
I think both of you felt the same. You started to mention talking about feeling like you'd blacked out at that time. So you would have been, how old would you have been at Luton Gym then?
Early 20s. Yeah. I think we'd got promoted. I hadn't played many games in the league. The year they went up from the Conference to League Two.
Yeah.
And yeah, would have just been relentlessly trying to beast myself in pre-season as I did every year to be the fittest I possibly could be, to get myself somewhere near the team, which I managed to do, but I can't remember anyone that was in the team at the time.
Exactly, kind of like you're just focusing on doing as much as you could to get in that team. And I think like we spoke a little bit previous saying like you're doing so much, everything else around it becomes a blur and you kind of get amnesia within the game.
You know? Honestly, I see people that go, all right, Jim, I've no idea who they are. Honestly, I've no idea who they are. I can't remember them. And I think it just shows I was so in my head, so much of that. And yeah, I'd go into pre-season. I remember that year actually, because I finished the season before on loan with Dartford, who were in the relegation battle in the Conference. Luton went up, smashed it. And so I was a bit of an outsider coming back to pre-season. And all I had in my head was just like out work, out run, out gym, out do, you know, do as much as I possibly could.
Yeah.
Which was basically how I spent my life at that point in my life. Yeah.
Just doing as much as you could because you didn't want to, you felt like that you didn't do something on that day, you would have felt like you'd have kind of let yourself down and you kind of lose your chance from that one moment. But was that really tiring on you, like to stay on top of that all the time? Did you ever give yourself that moment to break, or was it just like relentless?
I was relentless. Like from the moment the season would finish, I was like, right, pre-season. You know, I was into that mode. We've trained with the same trainer, Steve at Stride Performance, unbelievable guy. Mm. And he would always say like, you know, don't do too much. Mm. Like, let's train smart. And I'd be like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
And I'd try and do
ignore
I'd go,
that.
I'd yeah, go and yeah, do yeah. like the smart session in the gym with Steve, like all the functional stuff, all the foam roll. And then like I finish that, then I'd go down the park again and then I'd do more. And it was just, I could never do enough to fulfill that I'd done enough.
It
was like a never ending process. Yeah. And then the end of a day of maybe doing 2-3 sessions in a pre-season, I'd be on the foam roller. We were just laughing about this before the podcast. Like, the TV's on or whatever, and I'm on the foam roller till 10:30 at night.
Yeah.
And then bed.
Yeah.
You know, and then repeat the next day. It was just constant.
So your every kind of breathing moment was focused on that one thing, which was to play for Luton at that time.
Yeah.
Which when we articulate it like that, it sounds as if it's a really positive thing, that kind of sleep when you're dead, hard work works, that sort of, and there is an element of truth in that. Of course, hard work is going to hopefully be fruitful over time. However, consciously and subconsciously, the effect that was having on you, what were you blocking out? What were you feeling at that time? What were you really feeling at that time when, if every moment was spent work, like with that one goal, how did you actually feel? Who was Jim? Who was Jim, the man, not the player? Who was he?
This is the question, isn't it? Who was I? And to be honest, back at that point, I wouldn't have been able to answer. I was the footballer. You know, that was my identity. And I think this is the case for a lot of players. Like, they are the footballer. Mm. And when that's been your aspiration as a young child, like, it's the dream to become the footballer. So that you don't want to then let that go. You don't want to let yourself down. For me, I didn't want to let my dad down. It was just this constant, like, I must be the best footballer I can be and continue that. But, you know, you just mentioned a great point about, like, unconsciously, what was going on? What was I hiding from? And I think this isn't just to say this isn't just sport. This is life, right? This is life. The fact that we can not know who we are and be in pursuit of something, whether that be financial gain, sport, whatever it might be. My vice was work. Was graft. Was train. Was gym. Was foam roll. Was go and do extras. That was my vice to not feel. So I don't know what I was feeling because I didn't allow myself to feel.
It's quite powerful listening to you say that, and in not actually in a completely positive way, like, because I know you now. I didn't know you then. I know you now, and what I know is a really compassionate, kind, caring, hardworking man. But at that time, it sounds like there was, you were just one thing, and that was hard work, and that was. I'm thinking now as I speak, like, what must have suffered at that time in terms of relationships with friends or partners or family members, with if you're unable to stop going to the gym and just foam rolling and doing anything like that, there's no room for anything else. Like, it's so relentless. And I know myself that I would wear that as a badge of honor sometimes. In
100%.
Talking about my Sunday mornings would be spent sitting on an assault bike. And that was mainly so I could then take a picture of myself on the assault bike afterwards and say, look how fucking hard I'm working. Be inspired by me. This is, I'm brilliant for doing this. And I know my reality was I was in so much pain. I was in so much disillusion and confusion, and I was just lost. And the only identity I had was Jim, the guy that works hard. And interestingly, our relationship, kind of when we first knew each other, was we went to the same gym and you were just a slightly bigger gym than me. And I was like, well, I want to be big gym.
Two big gyms.
And it's, I think it's important to note that we're not suggesting that those things don't play a part in becoming the best version of yourself. And where we're actually now in that industry trying to help others perform that. But the magic happens when you rest. On the way over here, Craig and I were talking about a particular player that was a little bit lost at this moment in time and was wanting some support with his football. And we actually said that he's a goal scorer. He scored goals his whole life. He scored hundreds and hundreds of goals his whole life. Time after time after time. He's practiced. He's been a kid. He's hit the back of the net. To get to be a professional football player, you would have scored hundreds of goals up until that point. And actually, in terms of the next steps, it's more, do we need to be doing more attempts at goal? Do we need to be doing more things on the pitch? Or do we need to actually take a breath back and look at things slightly differently? And Craig's wonderful at doing those things and is something that he's offering in what he's doing now. But more isn't always better. There's a great saying that I always like, and it's just come out of my head a little bit now, exactly what it is. But sorry, growth isn't always about acquisition. And that's always really resonated with me. Growth isn't always about acquisition. More doesn't always equal better. I think about the analogy of a boat. How do you make a boat go from A to B faster? Sometimes you have to shed weight. Other times you put a big fuck off engine on the back and you go a bit faster. That's fine. There's many ways in which you can achieve optimal performance. And at that time you thought that was going to be what's best for you. Was it? Did it work out? Where did your career go after that point?
Hindsight's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Right? So you look back and you go, if I'd have been different, what would have been the result? You know, but I remember days at Luton where Friday, not in the team, they used to give the team on a Friday the day before the game, doing set pieces. The week before, not being on the bench. I'm out of the squad, trying to get in the squad. This was the year they went up in the conference. And Friday training finishes, lighter session. So I'm straight to the gym. I'm going to go and hit a workout. I'm going to go and like do plyometrics. I'm going to do core. I'm going to do upper body. I'm going to do everything. I'm going to just like do the conditioning bit because I've done my football today. Now let's go and condition. And I remember being on my own in a flat in Luton day before the game. And I couldn't just be with myself. I didn't have any sort of social life going on because I didn't allow myself to socialize. So all I did was go, right, I've got to train again. I remember like it was a Friday night and where I lived in Luton, which was a bad choice of where I lived. Yeah. I remember where I made the decision to live there and the kit man who was local was like, you've decided to go where? And I had no idea where. I just looked at the flat. Well, that looks quite nice. Overlooking the park. Turns out the park was where the dog fights happened. The drug dealers happened. Like it was not the place to be on the road that goes down to the station in Luton.
Yeah.
And also where the prostitutes wait and stand. And it was like, I'm from a little village in Over in Cambridge. Like it was very different. But I went out onto the park opposite where I lived, which had a hill. I just remember doing as many hill sprints as I could until I couldn't. Mm. And then went in and then felt satisfied in some weird way. And ended up being on the bench and getting on the next day.
Yeah.
Like for half an hour, legs gone. Yeah. And like, that's the what ifs, right? How would I have played if I'd have just gone out with someone, gone to see a film, gone to cinema, like got in touch with one of the lads who I never connected with. I didn't allow myself to just be and enjoy and play and have fun. Not play football, just like play. Childlike. I didn't allow myself.
I totally resonate with that. Like obviously when we're at Luton, even though we didn't see each other there, like, there was a day, like, there was a Friday before a game. I had a weights vest on and I was jumping over hurdles like on a Friday before a game trying to get stronger.
Me and you would have been best mates. Yeah. We'd have actually spoke to each other, mate. I'm not sure we'd have been good for each other.
No, we wouldn't have left the club. We would have just got a camping beds and just stayed in the gym. But it's like, it's that, as you say, it's that thing of just, you can't stop. Mm. You can't stop because you feel like if you stop, then you're falling behind.
Mm.
And it's just a mental thing stuck in your head. You can't stop. You've got to keep going until your body breaks. And then if your body breaks, then you've got to wait, you've got to stop and then go again.
Mm.
So that obviously for you, like, would there have been, did you do any mental training or was it just literally physical based? Did you think about the mental side or was it just like?
I did try and think about the mental side, like to try and manage my psychology. I remember went to see psychologist. I went to have a session with that Dan Abrahams as well. Like I looked into that side of things for sure. But it was all about being better. Like it was all about being able to perform better on the pitch. Mm. What I never did was psychologically care for myself.
Mm.
I didn't do any self-care mentally, emotionally, physically, really. Which I think is detrimental. And it catches up at some point. I'm conscious that we're saying that the way we kind of dealt with football was we just did more and more and more. But I had a lot of funny looks from guys that would be like, "What, you're going to the gym now? We've just trained a hard session. You're now going straight to the gym."
Mm.
And they'd look at me like I was weird. Mm. But then what did they do?
Mm.
They had other ways that they coped, for sure. Not everybody, but a lot of the guys would go and, whether it be gambling, and I met players that had a real problem with that, you know, whether it be just scrolling on social media, like avoiding. Yeah. A lot of people were, especially when football isn't going well.
Mm.
And that was the thing for me. When football was going well, it all seemed fine because I felt like I was doing okay. If I was in the team and I was playing, I'd still do all the work, but I'd feel good about that. But when I wasn't, I did it anyway, but I did not feel good.
A question to both of you here. And I've never been a professional football player, so I can't answer this fully. And we talked at length about presence and enjoying the moment. The goalposts are constantly changing in football. At any point in your career, either of you, did you think, wow, I am a paid professional football player? And yes, I can still look up, and yes, I still have aspirations, but fucking hell, I'm living my dream. This is what I wanted to do since I was a kid. I'm a professional. This is my job. My job is to play football. Were you able to ever find presence and congratulate yourself and say, well, I've done very well to get to this point? Or was it always just what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next?
I think it was fleeting. I think there'll be bits when you stop and you'd look at it and you'd go, oh yeah, I've done well. But then you're back into it because it never stops, does it? Like you obviously have your break in the pre-season, but you're never stopping your game. The pass goes, you train, there's another game, and it's just constantly over and over again. So it's very difficult to stop and appreciate it because you're always thinking you're falling behind. You're always thinking someone else is doing more, so I've got to do more.
Yeah.
So it was always fleeting for me. There's probably, I could count on maybe two hands, probably the times I've actually stopped and gone, wow, the rest of the time it's like, right, that's gone now, bin it. And that's what we said like earlier, like amnesia of like, there's so much that you just package away. Like there's so many times you've probably been shattered out by supporters, or the manager's said something to you, or you've just had really bad thoughts, but you just package it away because you've got to get into the next training session. You've got to get into that next gym session. So for me, it was always fleeting. Don't get me wrong, I did love playing football. Yeah. And sometimes it sounds like I'm battering it, but it's just kind of, I'm showing the side of it that people don't actually see. So for me, it was just very fleeting.
The same. Yeah, very, very, very rare would I be present with where I was at. And I was always looking to the next meal, session, game, training, whatever it would be. I didn't let myself really like, I remember the first thing I'd pack to go away on holiday in off season would be a pair of football boots. Like, I'd take my boots. You know, I wasn't able to just be and go, I've had a really hard season, I've done well. Like, you know, I remember the year I signed for Luton, that was a big step for me from Histon non-league to then get scouted and get that contract. Was like, that was what I'd been working for. That was like the dream move for a non-league Conference North player to go, and that would be the team you'd pick. If you were going to step up to the Conference, that would be the opportunity you get to be a player there, full-time club, what an opportunity. And I think we went out for a meal with the family, I can't remember it. And then it was just bang, straight into training. You know, I'm the guy that would make my own bleep test, you know, down the park.
I've been that guy at a lesser level, but like, and I've talked openly about addiction on this podcast. Absolutely, my biggest addiction was fitness, almost to a level of self harm, and it sounds like you were the same. Were you just interesting that your wife, who obviously you work alongside now and do some wonderful things in health and fitness, you weren't there together then, were you?
No.
Did you have a partner at the time?
Yeah, I had a couple of relationships. And funny, I've always told these sort of, not, you know, loads of people, but told stories of how bad it was and how bad they were.
Yeah.
And I look back now with some consciousness, a lot more, I'm still on the journey of like, you know, I'm not saying I'm like, oh, I know who I am fully. On that journey, I believe never ends.
Yeah.
But I look at more of my behaviours and the way I am and more self-conscious now. And I'm like, oh my God, I must have been impossible to be with. But like, I told myself the story that they were the problem, which is, you know, like the first thing you look at with relationships is like, look at yourself first. Like, that's the first thing I learned being to therapy with my wife. Like, I'm open enough about that to talk about things and work through stuff, because I believe that's what you need to do if you've got challenges, like go and talk about it. And like the first thing we got from the therapist was, you know, starts with looking at yourself. And then if I think back to how I was in those relationships whilst I was playing football, I must've been a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, you know, should we watch a film? Yeah, yeah. See, she's sitting on the sofa, I'm on the foam roller. Yeah. Should go out for dinner? Yeah, yeah, but I'm going to take a pack up with me. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's go on holiday. And she's like, the bag stinks of football boots because I've packed my football boots in the same, you know, like, nightmare. Must have been a nightmare.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, we've all played with people who are the complete opposite to what we have been. And on a Saturday, they play with such freedom and such flair and such, and it would always frustrate me. I'd always be like, how can I be working so hard yet they're doing fuck all and they're a million miles better than me? And the truth is, in many cases in my ways, I was exhausted by the time I got there. I was fucking exhausted by the time, and that wouldn't even necessarily be from just doing hill sprints on a Friday night. Mine would be from just kind of trying to control every single kind of factor involved in, every controllable factor involved in the lead up to a game. I had control of it.
Yeah.
Down to weighing my fucking peanut butter. Like the time that I put my rye bread in the toaster, like that level of intensity when it came to, mine was non-league football. I dare to think what I'd have been like if I'd have achieve more.
Yeah.
I dare to think, because it was so all consuming. And again, I my ex-wife, it must have been hell for her at times. And again, consciousness and hindsight are wonderful things. And I've had experiences again recently where I've really thought about myself during that time. And what you consider to be hard work and sacrifice is quite selfish in so many ways as well, isn't it? Like, I'm kind of reflecting as I talk right now.
Very much. It's like there's almost a, for an athlete that you feel is, you know, to go and commit to something that you think about Olympians and what they put in, like you often do hear that you have to be pretty selfish to be able to go and do that. And I actually think that that journey is a recipe for depression because unless you're conscious enough to find these other areas that you can fulfill the needs that we all have, because we all have a need to contribute as human beings, right? We all have a need to have connection, human connection. It's a human need. Mm. I didn't know this as a footballer, but I didn't allow myself a lot of those needs to be met.
No. Mm.
It was all about growth and reaching a goal that I didn't even know what it was I was going for anymore. And until you wake up to that, like, you can lose yourself fully. And I 100% lost myself.
Mm, I mean, I'm very blessed that I've got a partner in Amber. We've been together 18 years and she's been through every moment of my career with me. So as you were saying, I resonate so much laying on the floor. Yeah, let's watch a film together. And I'm there, got a ball out, rolling my ankles. And like we went to go out for dinner and I don't want to go because I'm not had a good game. And it's just all consuming. And it is just very... It is difficult in a way because obviously you're striving for something. But as you said, until you take that step back and you actually realise like your behaviours and what your behaviours are doing to others, like for me, stepping, once I come out of football, really truly looking back at it, I was like, wow, like I was proper selfish and I've affected other people around me. So I totally get like your the story you're telling and obviously what you were going through. Like I totally get where you're at.
Yeah.
Again, a great question to both of you. Here, what would you go back and tell that younger player? And I think something occurred recently. I was watching. So Jack Grealish had gone to like a working man's club. I'm a huge fan of Jack Grealish because I like how he is himself.
Yeah.
I like how authentic he is. And he's made mistakes. Haven't we all fucking made mistakes, right? And he was in a working man's club. I think he put a load of money behind the bar, bought everyone drinks and had a bit of a night out after a game or after training, whatever, in his own time. And again, he was being vilified for that.
Mm.
And in one moment, we're asking people to be more accessible and more of the people and more real. And the moment they go and do something that is like that, all of a sudden he's the bad guy again. So I actually feel for young players. And again, in your situation, you don't know what is right or what is wrong. Should I be out? Should I not? Should I be working hard? Should I not be like, what advice would you give to that younger man who's trying to achieve the same goals that you would have had? Like, What would you say to them now? What would you say to that younger version of you in those moments when you are phone rolling on watching a film with your partner, doing hill sprints on a Friday night, doing weight vest hurdles before a game? Like, what would you go back and tell that person?
You're okay. Like, you've done enough. Like, just, it's actually, I've done a lot of work post football because I went straight into business. And that became my new identity.
Mm.
It was like Jim the footballer, and then started this brand where I live, Overpower, from a village in Over. And that became, it was like Jim the footballer, Jim Overpower. That became my new identity. And I went all in on that. And then hit like really, really, really low, like mental state, like suicidal thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And that like triggered me to really go and do some inner work. Sometimes you hit the low to then realize, okay, I need to go and address some of these things. And I was quite fortunate that I joined a business coaching program to help marketing, sales, the whole understanding business. I knew nothing about business. And there was a mindset coach that you could benefit from.
Mm.
This lady called Eileen. It was like a session with her, which I thought was all going to be about like getting more motivated for business, like business growth strategies for your mindset, like how I'd approached it for football.
Mm.
Like, and it wasn't that. She does like inner child work and looking at the different parts of you. This is what my wife does for her coaching, because she's worked with the same coach and then has learned the same therapy approach. And I was like, okay, it's okay. It was like the first time you're just able to look at your situation, look at yourself and go, it's okay. So that's what I would say to my like younger, late teens, early 20s, push. I just like pull him to one side and have a conversation and just go, you're doing okay, you know? Like you can go and have some fun. Like you can just take a moment.
When you said that to yourself, when you gave yourself permission for that, how did you feel like physically and mentally in yourself when you gave yourself that permission to know it's okay? Like what was that feeling like?
It's a lightness.
Yeah.
Right. I feel a lot lighter in my life than I used to do. I still have to come back to that because I have still a desire to keep pushing. And that, like we keep saying, it's not a bad thing to be working hard and to strive and to want more. But where is the line?
Mm. Yeah.
Where is the line for that? It's fine to go out and have a drink. Where's the line?
Yeah.
Right? And I believe you only know where the line is when you step over it.
Yeah.
Right? And you realize I've stepped over it. And it's knowing yourself. And as my wife would say to all of her clients, and as I've been taught to do, is parenting yourself to be able to go rest. You know, like when a little toddler is like, they've just gone all day, right? I've got a little niece, Arlie, like, and she's got all day. And there's a point where my sister or the adult will have to say, okay, it's time to go and sit down, and then just fall asleep. Or, you know, whatever it might be, it's time to go to bed. You have to parent yourself into that state of going, you've done enough, it's okay.
My mum, and I remember it so clearly, because I remember like thinking she was the worst mum in the world for this, that no one else has to go through what I go through, right? And it was that she knew very early on that I had ADHD. She said she was the only kid who was expelled from playgroup for just being too intense. Like I was 2 years old and I wasn't allowed to go to like the child miners in the village. Like I was carnage. And and she would make me have this thing called, and I still remember, it's an hour's rest. Mm. And an hour's rest would come in the middle of the day. So I remember it particularly in school holidays. So she would say, right, it's time for your hour's rest. And honestly, I would be like, I can't even, I'm dreading this so much. Like what on earth am I going to do? And so much so that she'd give me like a digital clock. And I learned that I could change that clock ever so slightly, but I knew I could only get away with so much. So I changed it by about 3 minutes. And rather than using that time to rest or to do something else in my bedroom, like play quietly, I'd just stare at the clock. I'd just stare at the clock and look at it until it got to like 10 to, and then I'd change it back a little bit and I'd count the seconds. I'd play games where I'd close my eyes and trying to count and trying to get the minute. I'd do anything other than rest. Now in my adult life, if I get an hour to have a nap in the middle of the day, that's what I do. Like I give myself my hour's rest and it's so beneficial. But it went into my more teenage years. She used to say, right, you're going to have an hour's rest, but you're going to do some revision for your schoolwork. Here's your books, into your bedroom. There's no phone. I didn't really have like a phone then. It would be a distraction, but you're not having a TV. There's your schoolwork. And I couldn't physically do my schoolwork. I'd then do the same thing, stare at the clock and change it a little bit until the hour was up and then just run away from it. And I didn't do particularly well at school. And I remember as a child always feeling very emotional and very sensitive, especially to what others thought of me. And like the idea of telling someone I had an hour's rest was the most embarrassing thing. Mm. Genuinely now, if I get between clients in a day, I do anything for that hour just to calm down. And it's so beneficial. If I have that time in my day to rest, switch off, and don't have to sleep, but just not be working, everything else in my afternoon is beneficial because of it.
100%.
So that feeling, and I've only just got to the point recently, and this podcast has helped with it, where I said to Craig after our first couple of episodes, I said, I'm really proud of what we're doing. And I feel really happy about what I'm doing and where I'm at. And I can say that out loud without thinking I'm going to tarnish it or ruin it or something awful will follow that, that I'm accepting. I'm like, I'm good. Mm. I'm okay. Mm. I'm working hard. I've achieved some things that I'm really proud of. And I have aspirations for this to get bigger, for my other business to get bigger but like not at the expense of my relationship with Craig or the relationship with my partner or my relationship with people that mean a lot to me in my life. And it's a really interesting process. But again, hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
You sounded really, when you were talking to that 20-year-old version of you, you sounded like you wanted to give him a hug.
Yeah. And this is it. It's to go like, it's all right. You're doing like, not just you're doing well, like you're doing amazing. And you know, to give yourself that, because we all look, especially in football, right? So much of our self-worth can be determined by the opinion of a manager, the opinion of a team, of a dressing room, of a dad that's watching, whatever it might be. Like, it's an opinions-based career, right? Like, I remember the day where I'd had a full season at Aldershot Town. I played 40 plus games. That was where I went straight after Luton. And the manager at the time was Barry Smith, Scottish guy. He used to spit all the time when he spoke, but nice guy. And he offered me verbally a new deal. He was like, I want you here next year. Like, I want you as my, you know, main midfielder again. I want you to build on this season. So, you know, like, you feel like you're wanted, right? He left. New manager comes in, and every single player is sat pretty much in the stands waiting to go in for a meeting to find out if you're going to be given a deal with the new manager, Gary Waddock, or not. Based on what he knew about you, which was minimal, what games he'd seen, which was minimal. And, like, I don't blame him for it. He's just got to make a decision. And then you're released. And you feel as low. So you've gone from, I feel good because someone tells me they want me.
Mm.
I feel horrendous because someone tells me they don't. And, like, that was my football career in a nutshell, I think. Yeah. Like, but it was never stop. Doesn't matter what he said, good or bad, I'm proud of you. That was never given to me as a option.
I'm not sure I would have coped with having to deal with that. The state I would have been in a decade ago, I couldn't have coped with that.
I didn't either, because it was just work more. Yeah, I'll prove him wrong. Yeah. I just straight down the gym, straight to the park, straight. I had one of my best mates, best man at my wedding, Charlie Day. He played for Histon at the same point as me. And I progressed on from there. But we stayed as, like, practice partners. We lived in the same village, and we used to go down after, we'd be full-time at Histon, and we'd go train again in the afternoons together, working on drills. Like, just, we were relentless. I remember Steve, we both used to see Steve, our conditioning coach. Mm. He knew what we were doing. He was like, you've got to keep the volume, like, low. If you're going to do it, like, don't do too much. But we were like, the intensity was like, we kept it to 50 minutes, but it was 50 minutes of, like, high intensity. Like, if you made a mistake in the drill, we'd get down and do 5 press-ups each. Like, if Charlie made a mistake, I'd do 5 press-ups. If I made a mistake in the drill, we'd both do 5 press-ups. It was relentless. Mm. And this stayed, like, for 5-6 years. And I loved the time, because it was like, it was in the moment with what we thought was needed to get to the top. You read every autobiography, it's like, train more, practice more. We're like, we're doing everything we can to play. But I didn't ever feel, because it was just straight into that again.
Did there ever come a time when you were working so hard and you just like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, this doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. Is this the right thing I should be doing? Was there ever a time you kind of reflected and gone, maybe I should be doing something different?
No, I was deluded. Honestly, I was deluded. I thought I was doing exactly the right thing. I remember, though, we were doing this in a pre-season. Pre-seasons are generally intense, right?
And yeah.
It was with the manager at Histon at the time, was Dave Livermore, ex-Millwall, and it was hard pre-season. And every afternoon, same routine, we'd go home, back to our village in Over, both have some lunch, and then we'd go down again in the afternoon. Like, every single training day. And they did some blood tests on us, which was quite rare at, like, Conference North level. They did some blood tests. And I can't remember what mine came back with, but I got pulled into the office the day before a pre-season game. And he said, I'm not playing tomorrow. He said, you're on the verge of an injury. And I literally started crying. And I was like, I'm pushing so hard. Like, I feel fine. I'm strong. I'm in the gym. I'm not going to get injured. Like, I want to play. It was a pre-season game. And I was like, I couldn't hold back tears in front of him, because I didn't want to not, it wasn't just about not playing. I didn't want to have failed and be told I couldn't play. Like, it was just, when I look back at that, I'm thinking, what? And he was trying to help me. Mm. Literally, he was trying to say to me, Jim, you're doing too much. And he was like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing to be in this state? Because, like, so I told him my routine with Charlie, because Charlie's in the same team. And I was like, yeah, we go down in the afternoons. It's just technique work, though. And he was like, you're like, literally, you got a long season ahead of you. This is, you need to stop this.
Yeah.
And I went, told Charlie the bad news. Like, we're going to have to rethink this. Like, I'm going to end up not out of the team if I keep this going. Like, so we were like, right, we need to think of another way of moving forwards. So we took up afternoon FIFA together.
Right.
Right. This is, when we look back, we always laugh at this, right? But because we were serious, though, honestly, that's what I say, I was deluded. Yeah. Was dead serious. Like, needs to be progressive. It needs to be so. So what we're going to do is, instead of go down and play football, we're going to go FIFA, but we're going to think about, like, where we would receive the ball. Honestly, it was like, we look at it, it's hilarious. Like, and
it's an amazing mindset, though. Like, it is like your Rubik's Cube and everything, and looking how you can better yourself. It's just, obviously, it's gone to the extreme. You can't take that time to kind of step away from it.
No, I couldn't.
Injuries. So you the FIFA thing's class. That is amazing. Honestly, that is amazing.
Is it old school FIFA or like, what year are you talking?
This would have been, what year would have that? Like we were saying, I can't remember the years and the days, but I would have been early 20s. Like, yeah, probably about 20, 30 now. So 2010, okay. 2012. Yeah, about 2012.
Good FIFA is great playlist.
Yeah, career mode. Career mode, legendary.
Yeah.
Wouldn't lose a game. Like, possession based, 60% possession every game. Like, honestly, it was just so funny. When we look back, it's hilarious. But like, and don't forget, we were on like £100 a week.
Yeah.
Like, it weren't like we were on good money. Like, my parents must have been thinking where they were. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. It's like, becoming a professional footballer, mum. Like, get out. Honestly, just hilarious. And that lasted about 6 months of like, just this ritual of like, can't do it on the pitch, so we'll do it on FIFA instead. And we had it in our head that it was going to be the thing. I mean, I got my move to Luton, so something must have worked.
Bro, it's so
that
nice.
That could be the new thing.
Yeah. Honestly, it's just hilarious.
It's so nice to hear someone else just openly talking about doing nutty things, because I remember doing the nuttiest shit. And like, looking back on it, I'm like, like, what was I thinking? But it serves a purpose at the time. Like, and it's so interesting. I'm just going to come back to what you said about the injury, because Craig talks about a period in his career where he felt so psychologically fucked. He almost wished injury upon himself, and sure enough, it came, right? And we've talked at length about this in terms of the physical impact of the psychological issue. Craig has a book at his house about kind of how certain stresses will affect certain points in the body. And if you believe in reflexology and all things like that, which I know we all do,
100%,
will absolutely play a role in this. So that we're talking about Hist and you got that injury. I know you had injuries throughout your career.
I actually didn't get the injury. Like, it was that you're going to get injured.
Yeah.
It was, there was the point, and I didn't get one, but it was like, your blood test is showing you are literally fatigued. You're going to get injured.
So talk to me now about your body then. Because I believe, I've watched you. This might sound, this is, I don't want it to sound harsh, because it's not. Much in the way we talked about watching Craig's goals on YouTube, I watched some of your goals on YouTube when we played somewhere recently. And I said, "You fucking hell, what's a player like?"
Luton reserves, I think.
But still, listen, don't mind you playing what's in front of you.
No, and
I've watched some of your highlights, and I know how fit you are. Mm. And you've never been a drinker. You've looked after yourself. You've done everything right. But at 32, you're not playing.
No, I stopped at 25, not injured. I just stopped. So I think I'm quite unique in that sense for what stopped me playing football. I was mid-season at Chelmsford City.
Tell me about this, Jim. I don't know enough about this. Tell me more.
So when I got released from Aldershot, in that moment where it was like, you're either getting a contract or you're not, it was like, what's next? And I had two offers on the table, Conference. Dover was one and Braintree was the other. And Dover was a bit more full-time. Both were part-time. More money at Dover. Aspirations to try and get promoted. And they had quite a big budget. I went to Dover. Biggest mistake I made in football. Going there. Because Braintree actually had a really good season with the the brothers, the managers, the brothers that ended up at Lincoln.
Lincoln, I know who you mean.
Crowley.
Crowley brothers, who I've been told were brilliant for like developing players and helping them. And I just liked the way they played when we played against them. And Dover was very different. It was man marking. It was like very direct. It was, you know, you can't even show for the ball as a midfielder. Mm. Like going to try and get on the ball. What are you doing? Go and like...
pick up seconds.
Yeah. And like stay with your... No, don't, not even pick up seconds. Like, where's your man?
Okay.
Like, we're on the ball. Where's your man? Pardon? Yeah, I had to mark my man whilst we were in possession, still being aware of where he was. So it was weird style. But we actually did quite well because we had Ricky Miller up front and he banged in about 40 goals in one season. But I fell out of love with football. Mm. Ended up on loan at Southport. So at this point in my career, I'm signed for Dover, on loan at Southport, living in Cambridge, still training at Dover. You put Dover to Southport on the the maps. It's both on the coast and they are the other side. So I was doing a lot of driving and still doing all the gym, still doing all the training, but started to do a bit of PTing on the side and was just... I honestly can't remember that time of how I felt because it was just like, no wonder my relationship ended at that, in that period. Cause I was PE teaching in a school one day. I was just lost. Mm. Then I didn't even get, I got released, but I didn't even get told I got released. My ex-girlfriend saw on Twitter that I'd been one of the players that had been released from Dover.
But
guess what my response was? Down the park, back training, back down with Charlie, and a few other lads that live locally. I'm just back on it because it was all I knew. And I ended up having to go on trial at Chelmsford City to then get offered a deal there. And I was just numb, emotionally, physically, was still battering myself, not even knowing why. I think I was exhausted, emotionally, physically, and my business Overpower was starting to get going.
Yeah. Mm.
And I was loving it. I was loving the contribution point of view, the fact I was actually impacting other people's lives, and it was a distraction from football, and I was loving it. And I went to a seminar on how to grow a fitness business.
Yeah.
And I literally, this is one thing I do remember, to the T. Saturday morning, it was a Friday, Saturday, Sunday seminar. So I've been there on the Friday, back on the Saturday morning, and I'm sat front row, seminar room, and the lady up on stage says, "Are you doing what you really love in your life? And what are you doing it for? Because if you're not doing what you really love and you really enjoy, I don't think you'll ever be happy." Mm. And I just had this, I can feel it now. My stomach just fell out of my ass. And I was like, shit. But I'm supposed to be playing Saturday afternoon for Chelmsford in the FA Cup. And I was like, I can't go. I'm done.
Wow.
So I left the seminar room, rang my manager and told him I'm not playing. And I left football that day.
How did you feel them?
When I made that call, I was shaking when I made the call, you can imagine. I literally felt like a weight vest had been taken. I actually know what it's like to train in a weight vest because I did it every day. I felt like a weight vest had been taken off. And then I was like, shit. I got to ring my dad because he's on the way to the game. He didn't miss a game. So that was I've got to ring my dad and tell him I've just left football, which was everything to me, but was it? I didn't know anymore. I just knew I believe that, you feel, your body feels before your mind knows.
Yeah. Mm.
And my body knew. So you're not doing what you need to do right now. So I left and then just went all in on business. And that was when my new identity began. Yeah. Still didn't know who I was. I just became Jim that does Overpower Fitness.
So did you take that, so that relentless work you did with football, did you then take that into Overpower? Did you take that?
Yeah, and some, yeah. Because I'd not just left football to grow the business. I'd left football to grow the business and didn't know anything else. Mm. So it was this is all this is now where I'm going to put all of my time and energy. And like had some marketing coaching and all the stuff that they were doing. I just was like, right. And I paid a lot of money for this course. I paid like 10 grand for this course. That same weekend that I left football, I joined this course for like 10 grand on a credit card, like deposit on a credit card. I'll just figure it out. And I just went for it. Filled my like diary with one-to-ones, group sessions, just everything. I just worked relentlessly. Did pretty well like with the business because I pretty much fully booked myself. And I was actually sat in a gym session. I was sat on a Swiss ball with a client. I literally remember the day doing squats. And you may have been there doing one-to-ones on a long day, but like I was no longer like counting reps. I was no longer there. I was just sitting there. And she stopped and just went like, are you all right? You don't seem all right. And I just was like, yeah, I'm fine. And then I just walked back inside and just broke down. I was at my parents' house because I used to train all my clients in the garage. That was where I built my first like fitness business, was out of the garage. And I just went back inside to the kitchen, just broke down, completely broke down.
Did you feel, so obviously coming from the football, you've worked so hard, you're training all that time. And then you say, then you come out of that and you feel like that weight's lifted and you've gone into the new business. Then that same feeling appears again. Like how did you process that then? Because obviously you've gone, you think like, oh, this is it. This is all new. Like so everything's going to be brilliant, and then it's not. Mm. So then, like, what did you do? How did you process that? Like, what was the next steps after that to overcome that?
Well, I think that was where the self journey really began for me. That was like that was the low that I mentioned earlier. It was like, who am I? Mm. Like, who am I? Like, it's a hard question to answer. So I don't actually know. And that was around the like April time when I hit that low. And I went off to Tony Robbins seminar. I'd booked that already. Like I just started to go on a real like self-discovery journey. And the strategy started to be self-care. I'd say in a nutshell, it was like, how do I care for myself and refine myself? And what do I want to do? And like, in order to do that, you need time. But you need time. Because if you're constantly working, you're constantly coaching, you're constantly in the gym, you're constantly foam rolling, whatever that might be, there's no time to just be and figure out who am I?
Do you think you burnt out?
100%.
Yeah.
And 100%.
I had a conversation with my therapist about this the other day, and she said burnout will take about 2 years to recover from.
Mm.
2 years. Mm. If you reach that point, which it sounded like you're just a passenger in your own body. You don't even know what's happening.
Yeah.
It would take 2 years to recover from that.
Mm. Yeah.
So it sounds like the start of your recovery then. But
yeah,
I'm hearing that story and I'm so engrossed in this conversation. It's so wonderful. But actually, I'm aware that actually there'll be a listener to this at some point. And I think it's incredibly powerful. The fittest 25-year-old footballer just to quit the game.
Mm.
It's an incredibly brave thing to do, Jimbo. Like it's an incredibly like your story, and I know some of it, and I'm learning this the same time as the listeners learning this. And I know Craig will be feeling the same. The fittest footballer at 25 just to give it up.
Mm. When I made the decision, it was a like in the moment decision. And then after I was like, what have I just done?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
What have I just done? But I just knew that I wasn't happy. I knew that I needed to just give myself a break. I went back and played football a year later for Peterborough Sports, non-league, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I was just playing, you know.
Just free.
Yeah. And we spoke about this earlier, didn't we? Like players that you mentioned just seem to be free on the pitch and just don't seem to have the, like, where do you find that? That is flow state, right? Yeah. They're in flow state.
Yeah.
They're probably resting better. Like they've got other things. I believe they've got other things in their life that are fulfilling them as well. Mm. That I met my now wife, Colleen, like the same year that moment in the gym happened. I actually had my first proper holiday that year as well. Like I went to Argentina for 2 weeks where I didn't take my boots. Like I didn't take my boots. I had my first pint. Like it was actually Charlie who'd left football. This same guy was out there. He'd been 6 months traveling,
yeah,
finding himself.
Yeah.
And he invited me out there. Like, and I just went, no, I'm going to go for 2 weeks. Like, and it's going to be an actual, I'm not going to work. I'm not going to train. I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of that journey. And when we went on a long coach trip from where we were to where Lionel Messi grew up, we were going to go and find his house. And we had a little 2v2 outside the house. Because like, obviously we had a football, but most of us there like with football background. But it was just for fun. We actually had a 5v5 on a beach. So this near where Lionel Messi lived, there was also somewhere we'd heard it was like the hidden beach. I can't actually remember the town where he lived. But we ended up going to this hidden beach to swim and chill out. It's like this river with a beach. And we're doing two touch up in the air, just messing around with the ball. And over the other side of the beach is another group of guys doing similar. Before you know it, we're in a 5v5, England v Argentina. We lost 5-4, mate. I still haven't let it go. But it was like, I think that was partly finding myself was in that year, was allowing myself time to just go and live and do, you know, do things that I wasn't allowing myself to do. I don't even know what the question was.
No, that's lovely. That's why we do what we do. It's just, it's a good conversation. But that's what football's supposed to be, is moments like that.
Mm.
Seeing the five other guys and going, you want to kick about?
Mm.
That's why we started doing all this.
Mm.
You didn't start it, so you were running up and down a dark park in Luton, Hillsprings on a Friday night in tears. Like, football is it's beautiful and it's wonderful and so much joy comes from it. But like, when it's so all consuming, it's so out of your control as well. Like I used to really struggle with the idea of the fact that like I could lose and like, I now know that's okay, but I wasn't okay with it. I wasn't okay with like not being good or not getting the result I wanted.
I had to get used to that, Histon. This my first year in full-time football was a difficult year. We got used to losing, unfortunately.
But my mood was dependent on that. 100%. My mood was dependent on my performance and the result.
Yeah.
And the reality is that I didn't have that much control over it. Like on any given day, like football is just fucking chaos and you can turn up, you can work hard, you can do as good as you can and most of the time the result looks after itself unless you have some particularly special moments yourself. You're a cog in a machine and that machine can go wrong at any point. And I would take it all home with me. Like, and I would be, if we lost, it was my fault. If I didn't play well, like it was, I would always feel so, I'd validate myself based upon what happened on a Saturday. Yeah.
Were you the same, Craig, with your like performance-wise and results-wise?
Yeah. I told a story on here before. I don't know where I scored a hat-trick in the game. Me and Anne were going into London. And because I didn't score four, we went out to watch The Lion King. And she was like, oh, let's go around and go to a nice bar and stuff. I was like, no, I'm going to bed. So everything, all the results, everything mattered. And it was it's out of your hands. You've got 11 players on your team.
Can happen on any given day.
You've got another 11 players you're playing against. There's so much going on, but it always come down to what I did that let everyone down, or what I did wasn't good enough, which was so far out of my control.
Mm.
Nothing could ever be like right. It was always like, it was always something wrong. I couldn't appreciate it. I couldn't go, I've done everything I possibly can. Like you, like training so hard, doing everything I possibly can. And that's it. That's as much as I could do. I could never let it go. It was like, what's the next thing I could do? What's the next little bit I could add?
Mm.
Okay, if I'm training at 12 o'clock at night, I'm going to train until 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to do this. And it's just relentless and it's never ending. And as you said, it's like, it just becomes all consuming. You kind of lose who you are. Like your family and everything kind of takes a sidetrack to it. Life takes a sidetrack because you're so consumed by like just finding that one bit that's going to push you to that next level.
Mm.
But within football, as we know, there is non-stop levels. You get to that point and then you get to that point and there isn't a stopping. So you kind of drive yourself crazy in search of that.
and it can be so quickly taken away.
Yeah.
From someone's decision or to an injury. Mm. You know, I do have an injury now, which like I did tear my tendon when I went back and played. Mm. That's what you get for taking a year out of football and just going back in. Mm. But
did anyone see this, the amount of work you were putting in, and actually go, look, just take a step back. Like you're doing all right. Just relax. Or was it just a case of like, no, you're doing well. Just like keep on it. Keep doing what you're doing.
I don't know. I think I just, we create associations in our mind, right, of what we think's working. And I think because that way of being, I saw, got me my move to Luton. Mm. I thought that was the way, you know, because I'd worked so hard to get there. Now my brain goes, well, that's the way to get into the team and beyond Luton and all of that. So people would say it, but I didn't hear it.
Mm.
But, you know, Steve, the coach would say it.
Yeah.
I didn't hear him.
Steve would tell me the same things like that all the time. Yeah. Like,
and I think there's one thing being physically like rested and go, okay, cool. But emotionally, like, was I? No.
Not
fully.
Yeah.
Not that we are dogs, but I was. If you walk your dog the same route every day, it stops becoming tired. It will still come home and do that crazy zoomy thing that dogs do in the house. You give your dog a new environment with new smells and new sights and different things, it will come home and it'll be exhausted.
Mm.
Exhausted by the information it has taken on board. Your body could become so accustomed to that kind of like that physical fucking abuse that you could get away with it. But mentally, it just must have been fucking all consuming. No wonder there was no time for a successful relationship. No wonder there was no time for you to realize who you are. No time. No wonder there was no time for you to realize, do I actually even like this?
Mm.
I think it's incredible what you said about getting to that age and stopping and doing what you did. And that was the right thing for you now, because
you are brave, isn't it?
So brave.
It's brave at 25 when you're kind of working towards your prime, like to go, this is too much for me. I think, were there people on the outside saying, no, stay in, carry on doing what you're doing? Like, was there anyone pressuring you to carry on, or was it just?
Yeah, I mean, not pressure, but just questioning the decision. Like, Is this the right decision? Because they only see what they can see.
Mm.
You know, it comes back to that, like, what do you want?
Yeah.
You know, and I think you sometimes get to a point where you don't even know why you're doing it anymore. Like, what am I doing this for? Like, and is it actually making me happy? You know, if the answer is yes, then okay, great. But if the answer is no, then you can look at your life and it's bold and it's hard and it's scary, but you can make a change.
No,
that's the same for anyone in any career, in any job. I mean, like we're talking about the football world. Like, people get stuck in jobs for 50 years.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine. But like, I think the identity bit in football is what's so hard to break. Like, and that's, I believe, what causes the problems later in life as well for footballers, because their identity was, I am this. No, you're not. You're you.
Mm.
We've touched upon identity in almost all of our conversations so far. We've touched upon that in almost every conversation we've had, lack of identity coming out of football. The identity you have within football. Like whether you're at the start, in the middle of your career, or when you finish, identity has been something that's come up time after time after time after time.
And what to do next.
Yeah.
That, you know, which is why I'd love helping the guys that I've helped to start their own fitness business as well, because it's something for them to do next.
Yeah.
But even within that, I've learned and I have a responsibility to help them see that this still doesn't define you, but it's a journey that they can go on that meets a lot of needs because it's less selfish than football, I believe.
I mean this wholeheartedly, and I work with a lot of players. I would not swap what I do for their career. And I mean, people, I work with people who are paid lots of money to do what they do. I wouldn't swap what I do for it. And I really, really,
I'm with you on it.
I really mean that. And people would think, would go, nah, you're lying. I'm not. I'm really not.
Yeah, I have no regrets.
No, like, and I you could say to me now, I have players who play for their country, I have players who are playing good championship football. Like, I wouldn't swap what I do now, not for the money, not for anything, none of it. I don't, unless you're at the very top, when you're in the stratosphere of just a Ronaldo and a Messi, where almost everything you touch is turning to gold. And I'm sure that comes with its own stresses anyway. Yeah, like, yeah. No amount of money would let me stop what I'm doing now. And you said something earlier that I found really, really important. You said that it's a human need to contribute. Mm. It's a human. So my role at the minute is fitness. Our role at the minute is fitness. Craig as well, in terms of what he's doing as well. But fundamentally it's contribution.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm making a change. Mm-hmm. And I so desperately sought validation in so many problematic ways, and now I get validation from someone saying, you've really helped me and it's made me feel good. Mm. That's not totally selfless. Like, I do it because it makes me feel good.
Mm. Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with
I used to drink, take drugs and slow and sleep.
Yeah, yeah, there's ways that you can meet, there's multiple ways you can meet that need.
Yeah,
right? And this has come up a lot in conversation for me lately, like on this sort of self-growth journey of like, when is it that you need the validation? And when is it that that's no longer healthy?
Mm.
But like, I think if it's through supporting others for their well-being, for their like growth, for their mental health, for their physical health, like it's a good way of meeting a need, a validation.
Oh my God.
Very good way.
And
as well as it being to contribute, because it just feels good. But that can be the same feeling, like helping someone carry their bags across the road like an old lady.
Yeah, you feel good. Be a smile in the street.
Yeah, it's not because you go, I want to go and do that because I want to feel good. You want to help somebody because you can see they're struggling in some way. And the dopamine hit you get after that is they smile, they say thank you, they feel good. Mm. And you go, oh, that felt nice. I just get that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
All day. Yeah, it's wonderful.
So we've gone off on lots of little tangents, which is lovely. But we got to this point where you'd said you started really looking into your kind of self-care and what you can do now to make sure you're in the best shape of your life. And listening to you now, I'm even more like in awe of you, Jimbo. It's lovely. It's really lovely listening to you talk now. And I want to know what you've done in recent years from a self-care or holistic therapies or anything that has contributed to you being where you are now today. There's one particular story I want you to tell, which is the hit in the bag story. I love at that retreat that you.
I've been on retreats. Me and Colleen went to the Tony Robbins. I've been to that twice, and then we went off to Florida and did his Date with Destiny. He's got a Netflix documentary on that, which is quite a good watch. I don't know if it's still on there actually, but so we've done a lot of that. Then we've gone and done some slightly more niche, like, couples like retreats that were really like not weird, just deep connection and understanding yourself, where we thought we were going on a, you know, one of those, you know, when you see the film like a couples retreat and it looks nice and there's massaging together. Like, we just got separated.
Yeah,
like, men, you're going over here, women, you're going over there. And we were like, what is going on here? But yeah, I went on one which was through a company called The Awakened Man. And I actually got invited from a friend who was in this group. And he was like, there's a few spaces left on the retreat that they're running over in Wales. It was a couple of £1,000 to go. I'd no idea what it was going to be. It just said like the Awakened Warrior Retreat, like deep men's work. And I just thought, I don't know what I need, but I know I need to go, because I was still on this self-discovery journey. Like, who am I? And we did a load of things. We climbed Snowdon. We did, you know, like something called an Anipi sweat lodge, which was basically a fire. I'm going to explain this really badly, but very quickly, a fire in the middle of a teepee with no air that can get in. And the fire, sorry, not the fire, hot stones, put the water on the stones and it creates like a sauna.
Mm.
We're in there for like an hour and a half on and off. Like,
that's insane.
I passed out after, but they called it the rebirth. Because you go into within the womb, it's a very sacred practice. And I said, I've explained it very badly, But all I knew was that I was hot.
Yeah.
But you go within, and the goal is to go within and to surrender. To surrender to the process, which is a great message for life.
Yeah.
But I never surrendered to football. I didn't go, I'm just going to allow this week to unfold.
Yeah.
I tried to control every single factor. I didn't surrender. And the reason they do that at Nipi Sweat Lodge is to help you see, because physically, the only way you can survive that experience without just getting out because you're trying to control is to surrender.
Yeah. That's beautiful. That.
Which was amazing. And one of the other things we did was with a therapist, a guy called Matt Gunn. And none of us knew what was happening. All we could see was a rolled up carpet on the floor and a baseball bat and 15, 20 men in a room. I have no idea what I've signed up for. I don't know what this is going to be. And he asked us all to think about an experience in your life that you've got some anger about. And also somewhere you'd like to be in the future, and try and connect to what's holding you back from that place where you want to be. Because I believe we're all somewhere thinking we need to be somewhere, and we've got things in our way, obstacles, mentally, physically, everyone's got that. So for me, it was the frustration of the football journey, because I'd never actually talked about it or done anything with it. I just moved on to the next thing. Mm. And I believe this is really common in football. Like there's not really any therapy done on the thing. You might just talk about it to your mates and go, oh yeah, that gaffer was a prick. But you know, there's not much actually like deep work done on it.
Nah.
And it's the first time I talked about it in front of a group of guys, most of them I didn't know, and this therapist. He's like, and where do you want to be? I was like, well, I want to grow my business. I've started a franchise. I want to put it out there, but I'm not putting it out there at all. But I know I can help footballers, PTs, because I've learned what it takes to grow the business. I can guide them. Mm. I can support them, but I'm not putting it out there. And the question was, well, what's holding you back? And it was not wanting to do all of that work and be told that I can't and fail, because that's what I'd experienced in football. That was the trauma that I was holding in my body, was I'm going to do all of this work and it's going to be taken away. So there's a massive block there, right? Because my emotional state is dependent on like what my body is giving me, and it was giving me resistance. So this was the goal, to find that. And then it was, take the baseball bat. And I want you to think about that frustration, the managers, the pain. And he called it the 100 Club. So you had to get down on your knees, baseball bat overhead, and connected to that. But he did some weird stuff with his hands and my jaw. I was pissed off at this point. He pressed into the areas. If you like press into certain parts of your jaw where there's tension, it like really hurts.
Yeah.
And then he put a guy, one of the guys that looked like a football manager, and he told me afterwards that he was a football manager for a local like kids team.
Yeah.
To like stand there and say, you're not good enough, mate. You're not good enough. You're released. You know, you're too slow. All this stuff, the abuse that that I'd received. And this went on for about 10, 15 minutes, this conversation pre the baseball bat, to the point where the expression of the baseball bat was, as hard as you can, 100 strikes, release all of this frustration, this trauma, this energy on this baseball bat. So I did 100, but I'm quite a fit guy. And the therapist looked at me and I was sweating. I was done. He was like, you're not done yet, are you? And I was like, no. I ended up doing like 180 strikes, like full out, like nothing left, collapsed on the floor. And that was the therapy. It was like this just amazing release of like, just the energy, because it's all energy in our body. Just where does it go? And what was impact? Was that energy? Was that trauma having in my life? The biting comments to your partner. It's the anxiety that you don't know why it's there.
Yeah.
It's the feeling of not feeling good enough. You don't know why it's there, but it's in the body and it needs releasing.
Strikes me that what makes you brilliant also has the ability to harm you. Your relentless hard work and you're striving to be better and that desire to be the best gym that's possible, which is wonderful. You don't harness that, then it can become really detrimental. Mm. And it's like a toolkit, isn't it? You only had one tool before. Mm. You only had one tool, and it was just
work,
exercise, work. Mm. And you're now pouring that passion and that desire and that effort and that relentlessness into all areas of your life that need to be served. And you're relentless with your rest. You're relentless with your love. You're relentless with your kindness. You're relentless with your business as well. And it's not what's becoming really apparent to me is that you didn't need to change. You're so beautifully unique and authentic and yourself. You can't question your authenticity because you weren't going with a crowd. You were just going, fuck what you think about me doing all this. I'm going to do it anyway. Mm. Fuck you, I'm going to do it anyway. Because you believed in yourself. So it's beautiful, Jimbo. It's fucking beautiful. But you don't harness that, and it has the power to take over and to cause you pain. And that was the same in my life. It was the same in my life. What made me brilliant made me fucking awful at the same time. Mm. I don't know if you feel the same with your career. Like, it's that something can be so beneficial, but also can be so, so detrimental, Craig.
I think it's just harnessing it, isn't it? It's sometimes having someone helping you harness it. Mm. Having someone there that can kind of guide you, say your relentless work ethic. It's like, how do you then harness that as a holistic, a whole round thing? Yeah. Like, I think it's just having people, especially obviously in football, it's having someone who can holistically guide you. Your work ethic was just here. But how do you then bring all the others a bit together? Mm. And I said, as you've gone on your journey, you've obviously then started finding the people that then actually can help you harness it. And then you've now putting it into yourself and in your business, and then you're giving that now to other people, which is amazing. And I think it's helping people harness what their superpower is. Mm. So it's superpower can become your worst nightmare if it isn't harnessed right. So it's now finding the right areas, the right people that can actually then harness your superpower. Because sometimes you can't see it. No. Even though you were doing all that hard work and doing all that, when you're on the outside and looking, you go, fucking look how hard he's working. Like, it's amazing. Mm. And then it's adding all the other bits to it, like making you the complete gym rather than just this one section, which is what you've done. And now I bet you feel like you're thriving more, and you're now seeing life differently and seeing a different path.
Mm.
Which is probably what you didn't see. You just saw one narrow thing, and now you can see where you're going.
100%. Yeah. And I think, you know, you say like everyone's got their superpower. At the time, you don't necessarily see it, or you don't know. Mm. Someone might be listening going, well, what's mine? I don't know what it is. And like, it doesn't have to be something that you consider, you know, the fittest, the best, the most like intelligent. That doesn't mean superpower. Like, it's your unique self, and allowing that to flow. That's everyone's power. It's just being you. Just allowing that to come out. And I think, you know, like that story of the baseball bat and the, you know, the rug on the floor, it's a very unique situation, and it's a unique coach that delivered that. It's a unique retreat that I've never even seen them run it again. Like, it's not like everyone can just listen to this podcast and go, great, I'm going to grab a baseball bat and go.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, by the way, but like the when I look at what was it that enabled me, I suppose, the healing journey, right, to heal, to be able to just like let go of this stuff, is to be able to talk. I was able to talk about how I felt. Not enough people do that. Mm. Not enough footballers do that. I don't remember any conversations in the changing room with guys about like, how are you feeling about the fact that you've just been like dropped? It didn't come up.
No.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I remember I played for Luton against Cambridge United, and I'm a Cambridge boy. It was like FA Cup, and I started a really good game. John Steele, the manager at the time, was like, you're our best player today. You had a really, and I did, had a really good game, hold a midfield. And then I remember the next game I was in the stands. I couldn't understand it. But I had no one to talk to about it. I didn't talk to anyone about it. I just went to the gym the next day and smashed it out and kept going. But like, there was no talking. And not that that's the only answer, but I believe it's been able to talk.
To start.
Right. Yeah. And then being able to use what's in your body in some sort of physical way, like to express that. And that's what I never did. I didn't like connect to my frustration. I just Do you know what I mean? It wasn't a connection from the emotional to the physical. It was just all physical.
Mm. But I think like that in football, that's so just, it's the norm, isn't it? Like you're dropped, like you're not good enough, you're not quick enough. Like it just becomes normal and you take it in and you're like, oh, God, do better for next week, or the gaffer has a go at you and you take it in. But you don't realise, I think each and every player is different, how that's actually hit you.
Mm.
And I think sometimes you don't actually know it, how it's hit you, until further down the line. You just take it on board because it is just the norm. You get told these things all the time.
Yeah.
But then you say you would take it in. There's no way to go and tell anyone. So you've just gone, right, I'm just going to smash it out in the gym because that's the easiest thing.
Mm.
But they say there needs to be forms of talk therapy in a sense, because they are little things.
Mm.
They do seem minuscule, but when they build up and they build
they
up.
Yeah, they all have that little chink if you don't get to do the work on them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not easy to understand the impact of what these things have on us. It's not easy to understand that, because we're in the moment. We're just in that mode.
Mm.
But it's all good looking back on my career and going, God, the impact that must have had on me. And I come back to like what Colleen, my wife, does as a coach, is a lot of inner child work, because that is actually the essence of what we feel.
Mm.
A lot of the emotional like experiences we have as adults still connect back to what we didn't get or did get or experience when we were very little.
Yeah.
And for some of us in football, like they were experiences we had on a football pitch. Mm. Or, you know, as a young 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year old in academies or whatever that might be, that pressure, like that all had an impact emotionally on the adult.
Yeah.
Mm.
And this is why I believe there's the difficulty psychologically, because no one knows what to do with the emotion. They can, as an adult, go, well, yeah, you just take that on the chin. You just get, this is just how football is. This is what sports like is. But we've all got that like part of us that's really hurt by that. And we put the front on.
Mm.
Like in the changing room, we put the front on.
Yeah.
Like everyone just takes on our, like they swear and they do what they do to deal with it. Everyone feels it. It's just what they're going to do to cope with it.
I think and as you said, like that's a culmination, isn't it? It's like day after day after day after day, year after year after year, and you don't ever deal with it. And this is why I think players get to the end and then you have to deal with it, because that football isn't filling that void anymore. That go, 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 go is now stopped.
Yes.
And then everything that's trapped then goes, I'm going to come back up the other way, and it comes up that way. And then they say they don't know how to deal with that.
No.
And I think there's a big, like there's a missing piece. Obviously, the PFA are there to an extent, I think, for footballers, but I don't feel there's enough to look at players coming out of the game. For your instance, you came out at 25, like whatever you come out, you're coming out of the game. Like we've pegged you that you're out of the game. We're going to ring you. We're going to check. We're going to get people to talk to you. Obviously, it takes time. Sometimes you don't want to speak about it, but we're ready there, because we will know at some stage it's going to come.
It's going to come back up. Or it keeps getting suppressed back in.
Yeah.
Hence the booze. Yeah. Hence whatever that might be. Keeps getting suppressed back in. And then like that becomes disease or become, you know, whatever that becomes, it comes out in other ways that you can't avoid it.
And we wonder why. that was my and we wonder why. We're now sitting here having these conversations, and I really think they'll help. I really do. But we've had to get to the point of rock bottom, each and every one of us, our own version of that.
Mm.
Multiple rock bottoms in most ways, to have that realization. And the greatest strength really that we've all shown is the fact we're still fucking here.
Mm.
And we were here willing to have these conversations now. And I don't think we're going to change the culture fully, but I want to keep making a small impact on it. Like you're talking about that situation of being dropped like that on a match day. It's hard because there's a lot of other things going on, there's a lot of things that, but it'd be lovely on a Monday if someone rang you and said, like, how did you feel in that moment when I explained that to you, and you were able to go, you didn't have to go, yeah, fine, I'm just going back to work. How'd be lovely to go, I felt like I'd really worked my bollocks off, and I deserve my starting place. And actually, by you telling me that, I felt like I wasn't good enough. And that's kind of affected my confidence in training this week. It's also affected how I've been at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's affected my sleep. I'm not resting well before training. It'd be lovely to have that honesty.
Mm.
Be lovely to explain how we're feeling in those things. And then we would have far less people coming out of the game or within the game, suppressing emotions and 100%. Turning to other things.
Mm.
strength is given this label in sport of it has to be a physical strength or a mental strength. A mental toughness in football is shut up and carry on. Mm. No matter what's thrown at you,
keep fucking going.
Strength is being like, being really honest and really brave and saying, I went home and played FIFA because I was talking about how I was receiving the ball on FIFA. Mm. Strength is being able to be willing to say I was doing things that others wouldn't. It's not cool to do. Because the reality is, in the work we're doing and what we're seeing, the reality is every single person we're dealing with is going through these same emotions or is having difficulties in their own way. Or the feedback we get from the podcast, whenever we talk about issues like this, people come back and go, thank God you said it. I spent 20 years feeling like that. Yeah. Or I'm going through that right now. And we give people strength by their ability to resonate with our issues. But strength looks like this.
It's authenticity, isn't it?
Strength looks like this.
It's being able to be vulnerable and be yourself and express what that is. And like, I didn't do that in my football career when I was full-time. I didn't.
I was at my weakest on a Sunday morning doing 2,500 calorie assault bikes after a game. You were at your weakest doing fucking hill sprints on a Friday night before a game. And you were at your weakest doing weight vest fucking hurdles on the day before a game.
Yeah.
Really and truly. That
wasn't strength.
But people looked at us and thought, fucking, look at them.
Yeah. It wasn't. Strength would have been to have a conversation or to ring someone and go, this is how I'm feeling. Or like, yeah. I mean, in the last 5 years, I've never cried so much with all the stuff that's come up when I've gone to these, like, you know, talk about that, like that baseball bat experience. Yeah. The following part of that was tears.
Yeah.
After the Inipi sweat lodge, an hour and a half, like I passed out and then tears. Like I'm with a load of men, like that's not acceptable, but like, you know, it is.
It is.
To let some of that up and to go, this is how I'm feeling. And yeah, I don't know how you create the shift in the game. Mm. But I think it's creating the containers and support around the game to be able to give people those opportunities to be able to speak and have the journey after. And like you said, checking in with people, how are you? Like, what's going on? Because I left the game and didn't hear from anybody.
It's so bad, isn't it? It's so bad. And that's why I think, like, say, it will be hard to go in the game. And I think it's like building something around it, especially the guys that are starting to come out of it. I think that's the first pool who you can go after and look after, which then I think then will feed itself into the game.
100%.
It was really interesting point you said earlier. You said like you were tired at 25 and obviously you came out of the game and then you went into your next business, but you still weren't fulfilled within that business until you actually took ownership of you and was honest and real, looked at yourself. I think that was really, really interesting that it came down to, doesn't matter where you are, if you can move from business to business, you come out of football and you go into the next one, you're still carrying it until you stop and go, I know there's something not quite right here. I've got to do this work within me. Mm. I think that's when that shift must have happened. Like for you, you know, when you had to take control and go, this is me now, I've got to really, I can go from here, football, into this business.
I could do the same thing for another 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I've done it.
Yeah.
I've done it and I have to catch myself out on it and go, you're avoiding feeling right now. You know, because in football it was, if you're doing well, you're playing well, you're succeeding, then you are good. Mm-hmm. If you're not, then you're not. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was, and then in business it can be, if I'm making enough money, if I've got enough clients, then I'm good.
Mm. Yeah.
And if I'm not, then I'm not. And that's not the truth. Mm. It's just the process that you're in and the mission, the growth, the challenge. We all need that, especially as men and women. But like, we need a challenge. We need growth. We need like a mission, right? We need it. Mm. Otherwise, we're not fulfilled. We don't have purpose in our life. But it's knowing that that's the mission that you're on. But with that, you're okay. Like, if you've had a great week, great. If you've had a bad week, you're still great. Mm-hmm. Doesn't need to change who you are. And that's a hard one to get your head around, because the reality is, like, there are challenges in business. There are challenges in football. Mm-hmm. They're in everything, in relationships. You know, that's been the biggest growth period in my life, going through a marriage and being able to try and work through that. Because all of my self-worth after football and business, like, the validation I got was the fact that my wife wanted to be with me I've had to do a lot of work on that because that's not a good place to be in a relationship. Mm. It's all just about going, whether she leaves me or the business doesn't work, like, you're okay. You're going
to
be all right.
That's a powerful place.
It's a powerful, very powerful place to be in. And I was just thinking as you described that then, it's just the beauty really is in the non-linear aspect of this journey of growth. The beauty is in all those challenges, and it is in those moments where you haven't got enough clients, or there isn't enough money, or that things aren't. That's where the real growth happens.
You still be happy with that?
Yeah.
In yourself, but still be, because it's easy to go and there's a, in the holistic therapy, lots of coaching experiences that I've been involved in and facilitated now, it's easy to just find this comfort blanket of what I've just said, which is, well, I'm okay. Well, good that you feel that way. But you still got to get up off your ass and go and move, right? Because it's easy to go, oh, I'm okay, whether the business is bad or not, do anything with that. Mm. That's a dangerous place to be as well, because you're then not moving into growth. You're just hiding behind this, you know, I'm okay, but you're not actually. You know what I mean? You can just create that persona that you're okay because you're okay because you aren't. So it's a really fine balance that I'm trying to learn how to strike, because my role model has been my dad in sport, in life, in business, and he still, and he'll probably listen to this, is relentlessly working. Mm. He's mortgage free.
I hope he's proud of
him. He's relentlessly working, and I'm so proud of him for that, but he doesn't let himself stop ever.
I think he'll listen to you and be incredibly proud. Mm. I think he'll be incredibly proud. I was just thinking of something you just said there as well. Someone said to me earlier, don't pray for rain and then moan about the mud. Linking it to what you were just saying there is like, we always have this feeling of we're wishing for something, we're desiring something. Our growth has a goal, but it's always going to come with its own challenges. Mm. And that's where the real beauty is. Like that's where it makes us. Mm. And it's, I think that's an incredibly profound, I'm a little bit lost for words, actually. I'm not often lost for words.
I know.
I'm really taking that all in. And I think, I was talking to Amber, Craig's partner, on the way over here about my therapy. And I was saying about doing some continuing my therapy. I go to therapy now and I don't really have a lot to say. I don't have a lot to say. And Amber asked, how often do you go? And I said, well, I was once a week, then I was once every 2 weeks, and now I'm once a month. Mm. And part of me feels like I don't need to go anymore. Part of me feels like I'm all right, I'm good. But that would be the biggest mistake for me to make. Like for me to stay on this journey and to keep feeling at home and at peace within my body, I must keep doing the things that have helped me get to that point.
Mm. I'm the same, I'm with you on that. Bi-weekly conversation. Sometimes don't know why I'm having it, but then I do.
So what's next? What's next for you?
When we spoke in the gym and we connected, I was like, I need to do more. Not need to. I want to do more to support the guys that are coming out of football.
Yeah. Like,
and I love what I do in my business. I love the contribution it gives me. I've got a great balance because I work Mondays. I take Tuesdays as a free day in my diary. I work Wednesdays hard. I have Thursday, Friday is a pretty free day in my diary because I do groups, sessions. Like I shifted, you know, when I like realized that this burnout thing is not serving me. Mm. This constant work is not serving me. I needed time to be able to bring other things into my life. And I still work very hard, but I give myself space to, this morning, walk the dog, go to the gym. Mm. Like I've had space to be able to self-care so that I can then do what I do. And I've seen so many guys come out of the game and go into a push career, a push business. And I just know that they need to create more space for themselves to allow some of this stuff to come up, because it's going to impact their relationship. It's going to impact their life if it doesn't, because it was for me.
Yeah.
So it's to see if there's a way of, well, I know there is a way. It's to do more of this. It's to speak to more guys that are coming out of the game. Like I'd be more than happy to someone to go, Jim, I've listened to the podcast. Like I'm struggling right now. Can we have a chat? Like, just to be able to contribute.
Absolutely.
And like, not for any gain, just because I needed that. Mm-hmm. And if there's a step for someone to go, I love the idea of having a business like you, Jim, which is what some people have done coming out of football and done really well with it, and going, can you help me set this up? Because I like the look of your structure of life and I can see myself doing that.
Good.
Yeah. Then do it. Like, come towards me and say, Jim, help me. Because that's what I did. I paid money, that business course, to go, I don't know what I'm doing here. Help me. And I believe we all need that in some way, whether it be a PT for our physical, whether it be a therapist to get our psychological state. At one point in my life, I had a therapist, a PT, a business coach. Like, I still have all of that now, actually. I say that at this point in my life, I still have all of that because I want the support. You don't have to do it alone.
That's amazing.
So I'd like to support more people in a nutshell.
Yes,
that's what we're trying to do, isn't it?
That's awesome.
It's so incredible to have a guest share an ethos like we have, and to speak so much passion. You can feel it. I was explaining you to Craig on the way over here, and I just said the passion he has in what he does and how he articulates that is so incredible. And listening to you today has been beautiful. And it brings us to our last little section, because I keep having a little glance at the clock. We're deep in now, and we've got running a little bit out of time, and I could talk all day, but the last guest, so we're a little bit of a theme with the podcast is that we ask the last guest to give a piece of advice to the next and to the people, and then for them to follow that up with a piece of advice or a quote or some knowledge that they live by or has been really impactful for them or really profound for them. And JB, our last guest, had said his dad had told him, don't be a sheep. Go and trust what you're doing and be authentic in what you do. And I believe he's living that. Over to you.
My feedback on that bit of advice first.
Yeah, maybe as well.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think stepping out of football at 25 was not a sheep. It was like the complete opposite of that.
Very much. You've never been a sheep, I can tell you that.
No. And I remember I used to walk into dressing rooms and sort of try and hide some of the things that I was doing around my health, around my foam rolling, around like my bit of raw veg before a game. And I'd hide that. Honestly, I'd hide that. I'd go into a cubicle toilet and eat my carrot batons because I don't want. And I remember when I went back, having done not anywhere near to the level of therapy and sort of journey continues, it's still continuing. But I'd done some work and then went back and played football for Peterborough Sports. And I used to walk in and it became an ongoing bit of banter. I was like, what raw veg is Jim going to eat as he walks into the dressing
room?
Brilliant. And it became the thing. And what was really interesting is that some of the lads in there, like quite a low level, used to smoke before games, but they actually didn't judge me for it. They took the piss, but they didn't judge me. They were just like, cool, look at you versus me. It was just part of the banter, which before I wasn't ready to feel that because I felt that was a judgment on me. So I'm good either way. Whether you like my carrot carrot or not, I'm good with it, right? But guess what happened? They all started wanting to get involved with my carrot. No, they were literally before a game went from Haribo to like carrot batons.
Yeah,
and like, that was really interesting to see that over 6 months of like before the game, people were like, Jim, chuck us a carrot, and I'd bring in my carrot batons and they'd be eating them before the game because they felt better.
Yeah.
So I believe that that is true. Do not be a sheep. And my bit of advice would be, you asked this before to think about it and it's just come so clear now, is there is always a part of you. And this comes from my wife and her coach. And I feel like I can share that into this community because it doesn't get talked about enough. Mm. There is always a part of you that you need to address that you're not. Mm. And to remember that. So when you're pushing into growth or when you say you're all right because your reaction to getting released is, I'm going to crack on. Good. You can crack on. But don't forget the part of you that is hurting, that needs to be spoken to, that needs to be cared for, that needs to be looked after, that might need some rest. Because we all have that part in us. And I used to completely ignore that part of me.
Wow.
It's beautiful.
That's a lovely end to an incredible podcast.
It's been a privilege having you on, mate.
Thank you.
Really a privilege.
Really has. Thank you.